All right, we are going to start out this morning in John chapter 5. And I want to share something that the Lord's been kind of convicting me of. Is that a good word? Is that a good word? It's actually very similar to a message Jamie recently gave as well. It's just coming from a little bit of a different perspective. But I highly encourage you. He gave a message a couple weeks ago where he talked about Mary and Martha, and it was so good. And I know that I'm biased, but he's like the best. So so if you weren't here, I highly encourage you to either pick up a CD or you can go on Facebook Live and watch the video or do the podcast. But John chapter 5, starting in verse 1. It says, after these things, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porticos. In these lay a multitude of those who were sick, blind, lame, and withered. Now porticos are just like porches. So it's a picture of a pool, and there you can kind of imagine like the columns, and it's like these five covered porches where sick people would come, and they would just lay. And it says, they would be waiting for the moving of the waters. For an angel of the Lord went down at certain seasons into the pool and stirred up the water. Whoever then first, after the stirring up of the water, stepped in and was made well from whatever disease with which he was afflicted. Like, people tell me the Bible's boring, and I'm like, do you read it? You know, like, what? There's an angel? What does that mean? And we're just going to gloss over it this morning because it's not the point of my message, but there are so many mysteries of God in here. I encourage you to read it. It's really fun. All right. A man was there who had been ill for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been a long time in that condition, he said to him, "Do you wish to get well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I'm coming, another steps down before me." And Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your pallet, and walk." Immediately the man became well and picked up his pallet and began to walk. Now it was the Sabbath on that day, so the Jews were saying to the man who was cured, "It is the Sabbath, and it is not permissible for you to carry your pallet." But he answered them, "He who made me well was the one who said to me, 'Pick up your pallet and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is the man who said this to you?" But the man who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had slipped away while there was a crowd in that place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "Behold, you have become well. Do not sin anymore, so that nothing worse happens to you." And the man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. And for this reason, the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. All right, so we have this picture here of this man who had been sick for 38 years. Like, that is a long time to be dealing with an affliction. So he had been sick for 38 years. Jesus comes and he asks him, you know, "Do you want to be well?" And in that moment then, after he says, "Yes, you know, I want to be well," the Lord speaks to him and he's healed. This is a really amazing thing. This is something to celebrate, right? However, Jesus was breaking the rules, because you weren't supposed to do stuff like that on the Sabbath. You know, it was against customs. It was against the religious laws of that day. So instead of people celebrating when they saw that he was healed, they were upset because the rules had been broken. Not only had Jesus broken the rules and healed him on that day, which, I mean, I think Jesus can heal somebody in a pretty restful state, so I'm not sure how much the rules were broken, but then he instructed this man to break the rules of the Sabbath too. And so the Jewish people were not happy. They were upset because their customs had been broken, because their laws were not being followed. And so what does Jesus say to them? He says, "My Father is working until now, and I myself am working." Like, so Jesus, they're upset. Jesus knows they're upset because he's not doing things the way they're supposed to be done. And his reply to them is, I am not doing things the way they're supposed to be done because I'm doing what the Father's doing. Because he's working until even this moment. And so that's why I'm working too. So Jesus is saying a couple things here. One of them is that the Father and what the Father is doing supersedes any sort of religious or earthly rule, structure, or custom, right? So he's not going to worry about breaking the laws if he's doing what the Father is doing. The second thing that Jesus is saying is that he's saying, hey, if I see the Father doing something, then it's an invitation for me to do it as well. And this is really important if we're supposed to follow in Jesus' footsteps, then these are important things to note. So what does the crowd do after he explains this? Do they go, oh, that makes sense. Okay, yep, as you were. Yep, we just didn't understand, sorry. No, that's not what happens. It says in verse 18, for this reason, therefore, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him. Because he was not only breaking the Sabbath, but he was also calling God his own Father and making himself equal with God. Okay, so they had been mad, and his response does not smooth anything over. In fact, it makes things worse, which seems to kind of be a pattern sometimes with him. But it's amazing, like when we talk about how they were angry at Jesus, you know, we're not talking about like social media mad. I don't know if you guys have ever witnessed that or experienced it, where somebody like put something up on Facebook maybe without really thinking through the implications of what they're supposed to or what they're putting up there. And then all of a sudden, you know, 3,000 comments later, there's like World War III happening on their feed, you know? Like, that's not a comfortable situation to be in. But this is worse. Like, they're not just mad, they actually want to kill him. Like, they want to kill him, and they have the means to do it, as we know from how the story unfolds later. But Jesus isn't worried about it. And the reason that he's not worried about it is because he is living his life not according to an earthly agenda, but he's living his life according to a heavenly agenda. And that's what I want to talk about this morning, is what it looks like and what it means to live our lives according to the agenda of heaven. Because we live in a culture that is full of agendas. And this isn't a bad thing, by the way. Like, if you want to get something done, it's good for you to have an agenda. I don't know if you've ever been in a meeting that doesn't have an agenda. Yeah, they go a long time and nobody gets nothing done, right? Like, it's good to have an agenda. It's not that it's a bad thing. It's just that sometimes we don't realize that what we do is we try to fit heaven into our earthly agenda. And the Lord's saying, no, that's not how I do it. Like, I need you to actually be paying attention to what's going on up here. And I need you to live your life according to that. Because it isn't that the Lord can't use earthly agendas, but it's that what he does can't be contained in them. Like, I don't care what, like, how magnificent or wonderful the structure that we could build is. Like, we could actually, you know, somehow, it's hard to imagine this, but build some sort of government system that most people were happy with, that was doing good, that was effective, you know, like where we weren't having so much divisiveness. And do you know what? It still wouldn't contain all of what God does. Because he's bigger. He's above it. Like, thank goodness. I joke to Jamie, and you guys may not be ready to joke about politics, so I apologize. But, you know, when President Obama was in office, we would get angry letters from people about our political statements that we would make from the pulpit. And the people we would get angry letters from tended to be Republicans or conservatives. Now that we have a different president in office, we get angry letters that are almost the exact same, but they're from people who tend to be more Democratic. And the reason is because our position actually hasn't changed. It's just that your offense level is different because of the political culture of what's happening around here. So again, I'm not saying it's bad to have a political point of view or to be active politically or to have an earthly agenda, but what we're here to do isn't to share our political opinions with you. What we're here to do is we're trying to get you to lift your eyes above that and recognize that the kingdom is not subject to any sort of government. And so we never have reason to despair because we know the one who is above everything. And so, yes, that's a good thing to applaud. So, yeah. So if we're partnering with him, then we know that we don't have to worry about the way anything else is structured because he wins. He's bigger. You know, like one of my favorite games to play with the kids, the older ones won't play it with me, but the younger ones, you know, you want to play a game? And they'll go, yeah. And I'll say, okay, let's play. I win. And they're like, okay, how do you play? Oh, I won. Like, that's the best game, you know? It doesn't, they only play with, like, me a couple times before they stop doing it, but I like to win. And maybe you're not like that, but either way, God wins. And there isn't a structure that's set up that can actually stop his will from progressing in the earth. And so we get the divine privilege of lifting our eyes up off of the earthly circumstances around us and seeing what's happening in heaven and partnering with that. And that is something to be excited about. Jesus healed on the Sabbath because it's what he saw his Father doing. And people were all offended because of it. And it's easy for us in this position to look back and go, well, I can't believe they would get offended. Here is this man who was sick for 38 years, and now he's healed. How on earth could they have responded that way? You know, like, it's easy to look back in judgment when we can see the whole story and know how everything ends, right? But what I realize is that far too often, I behave in the same way. It doesn't look the same. You know, I'm fine with people being healed on the Sabbath. You know, I encourage it. So if somebody's in here and you need to be healed, get prayer before you leave. Let's get you healed. You know, like, that's good. We'll celebrate. We won't get mad at you for carrying your pallet. You know, like, it's good. You're in a safe place for that. But I do get offended when the agenda of heaven interferes with mine. You know, sometimes it's big ways. Sometimes, you know, the Lord, like, my life is going in this direction. And the Lord says, no, that's not where I want you to go. I want you to go over here. And I think, but God, you don't understand how good this plan is. You know, like, this is really good. I had a plan, and I was, you know, on my way, and it's a really good plan, and you are bringing me over here, and that offends me because I'm having to lay down what I want to follow you. You know, sometimes it's little things. I had this experience this week. I'm sure it will be very difficult for you to believe, but I woke up one morning this week really crabby. I usually am a pretty happy morning person. You know, not like early morning person, you know, but I wake up pretty happy usually. And so on this morning, I had gotten woken up by a dog a lot earlier. Cute dog, but still a lot earlier than I wanted to be, you know, and so I got up with the dog, and then I had a bunch of little people that were awake, and they were ready to talk, and they were excited to see me, and they had a lot of words, you know, and I hadn't had any coffee yet, you know, like my eyes were like, I think, barely open, and I was crabby, like I was not in gracious mode, you know? And I knew that I shouldn't be responding out of my emotion. Like, I don't know if you've ever had that moment where there's, like, that warning going off in your head, you know, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, you know? So I dialed down my crabbiness slightly. But I was still crabby, you know? Like, I was still missing the moment. And I knew it. I knew I was blowing it in that moment. I don't know if you guys ever do that. I'm sure you don't. But where you know you're doing the wrong thing, but you do it anyway for whatever reason. You know, and when I finally came to myself and I'm repenting for it, like what I saw was that there was a moment that would have been a holy, sacred moment that the Lord was actually choosing to give me a special moment. Like, I mean, I'm crabby and I'm in my home with my amazing children and my, you know, beautiful dogs and like these blessings, and the Lord's like with us, and I'm blowing it because my agenda was different than what was transpiring, you know? And I just felt like the Lord was saying, hey, this was an invitation, you know? Like, I had something for you in this moment, and had you just allowed yourself to partner with what I was doing, that would have been a really special and divine thing. You know, sometimes we blow it, just like the Pharisees, because we have our idea of what things are supposed to be like, because we have our own agenda, and when heaven's agenda comes, it interferes. It's not always easy to live according to the agenda of heaven. It's good, it's worth it, but it's not always easy. And the reason for that is because, as I've mentioned, it interferes with our own personal agenda. But the other thing is that living according to the agenda of heaven isn't something that you can, like, plan. You can't make laws and customs out of it. It's not something that, you know, I like to know what's going to happen. I like to know what the rules are. I like to be able to plan my life in a way that's pretty structured. You know, like in terms of, you know, like I homeschool our kids and I have a job and I have these different elements of my life. And even though I really like spontaneity and being flexible, I recognize that like my life works best when I have structure, at least of some sort, right, that I can work according to. Because you get comfortable and it's safe that way and you know you're going to do the stuff that you need to do. And that's why religion is so appealing, by the way. Religious structures are really appealing because if you have clear guidelines and rules, then you can live your life according to them and you know you're doing okay. You know, like if being a Christian is about the rules, then I know like, okay, wait, I can't dance or drink or chew bubble gum. Is that right or no? I don't know what the rules are, you know? But like we have these structures that we build because then we can stay within them and we feel safe and it feels secure and it feels like, okay, I don't really have to put much thought or energy to this. I just do these things and I know that I'm okay. But that's not actually how it works. In Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 15, Jesus says this really surprising thing. And this is what he says. Beware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles, are they? So every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot produce bad fruit, nor can a bad tree produce good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then you will know them by their fruits. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Okay, so the surprising thing isn't the part at the beginning. We can look at nature and know that a tree is going to bear fruit according to its kind. You know, if you want fresh apples in your yard, you're going to plant an apple tree. You know, if you want fresh mangoes, you're going to have to move. But the point is, is that you know that your tree is going to bear fruit according to what kind of tree it is. So that part's not surprising. But what is surprising is the example that he gives at the end there. Because he says, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons? And in your name perform many miracles? So he's giving an example of bad fruit. You know, like I would expect him to talk about lying or adultery or murder or like things that are clearly bad fruit, right? But that's not what he says. He uses these examples of prophesying and casting out demons and performing miracles. If I saw that fruit, I would think that that fruit was good fruit. You know, like this is what he's instructing his disciples to do. This is what he's sending them out to do. He's training them up in these things. It's not that these things are bad. So why are those the example? Because people were doing them without knowing him. Do you know that it's possible to do really good things but not actually be following the agenda of heaven? Do you know that you can do good works, but God's will is that you're actually doing this thing over here, so you're not really being obedient, and the fruit that you're bearing isn't actually good? That's scary. That means that I can't just make up a list of rules and go, these are the things I do, and these are the things I don't do, and as long as I stay within these, I'm following God's will. It means that I have to actually know him, and I have to actually stay connected to him, and I have to know what he's doing so that I can do it too. When Jesus says there, I never knew you, depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. What is interesting is that word there, when he's talking about how I never knew you, that word, it indicates like an intimate relationship. But it also, it can be phrased like this, that Jesus is saying, I do not recognize you as one for which I am responsible. I do not recognize you as one for which I am responsible. Like, that is a sobering thing, but it also, if you look at the other side of it, it's something of great comfort. Because do you know that if you're following God's will, that he's actually taking responsibility for the outcome? That you don't have to worry about it? That you just get to be obedient and trust him with the results? Like, that's a really amazing thing. That means that you don't have to worry if he asks you to do something and you don't know what you're doing, but you just obey, that great things are going to happen because he's going to be responsible for the outcome. You know, in this journey of us with this church, when we first started this church, it wasn't the plan. It wasn't our agenda. The Lord kind of broke into our lives and led us in a direction we hadn't been anticipating going. But you know what's really comforting about that is that we don't really worry about the church. Like, we take responsibility for it. We work hard. We take it seriously. So don't think, I don't mean any of that stuff. Like, it's been a hard journey. You know, it's required a lot out of us. But we know that the outcome of it isn't on our shoulders because the Lord is the one who brought us into it. And so this really isn't our church, it's his. You know, when we need a building, I mean, Jamie will pray. You've probably heard him pray, Lord, this is your church. This is your problem. You know, like you're going to have to provide. And there's something so comforting about that because we know without a shadow of a doubt that if we're following him, that he actually will provide. That it's actually going to turn out good. Doesn't mean that it's not going to be hard or require sacrifice or be uncomfortable or that there's not going to be moments when I think, but Lord, why is it like this? You're the one, I'm following you, I don't understand, you know? But it means that ultimately we can trust the outcome to him because if we're following his voice and we're connected to him in intimacy, then he actually takes responsibility. And that is an amazing thing. I love that because he's so much more capable than I am. Because I don't have to worry about the fact that I don't know what I'm doing. You know, because if he chose me to do something and I don't know how to do it, then he's going to equip me along the way. He's going to send somebody who can help me. He's going to give me resources. Like, he's going to miraculously intervene in some way to make it possible. It's so comforting to not know what you're doing if you're following him because you know that he is going to take responsibility for it. And that is awesome. That is good. But again, the agenda of heaven, it can't be found outside of intimacy. And by the way, when I say the agenda of heaven, what I'm really saying is just a different phrase for the will of God. Because that's what the agenda of heaven is whatever God's will is. In John 5, starting in verse 19, it says this. Therefore, Jesus answered and was saying to them, truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself unless it is something he sees the Father doing. For whenever the Father does these things, Sorry. For whatever the Father does, these things the Son also does in like manner. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all things that he himself is doing. And the Father will show him greater works than these, so that you will marvel. And I want to skip down to verse 30. It says, and this is Jesus talking, I can do nothing on my own initiative. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just because I do not seek my own will, but the will of one who sent me. Like, again, Jesus is just saying everything I do is directly connected to the Father. Like, this just blows my mind because Jesus, I mean, he's Jesus. You would think that he wouldn't really need to check in. You know? Like, you would think that when he came upon a situation, he would probably choose to do the right thing. Like, you know, he could just go about life and he would make the right decision. I don't know if you know people like that, but just who really walk in wisdom, and it seems like whatever they do prospers because they do walk in wisdom and they just seem to know the right thing to do all the time. Like, that's amazing. That's awesome. You know, like if anybody could do that, I would think Jesus could. And yet Jesus says, I don't do anything that's my own will. I only do what I see and what I hear. I don't take initiative for anything. I only do what is already being done by my Father. Like, if Jesus found it necessary to live his life that way, how much more should we? You know, how much more should we recognize that we need to see what he's doing and follow suit? And what's awesome about this is that when you see what he's doing, there's so much confidence, you know, because the Father's already doing it. Like, I know this is what he's going to do, and so I'm just going to enter into it. I'm not having to do something on my own. Like, there was a time, one time that Jamie, like, he got to pray for this woman. There was a woman, she was a single mom. She had injured her shoulder quite badly. She was going to need surgery, and the surgery was going to take her out of work for, like, 6 to 8 weeks or something like that, which was a really big deal. It was going to be quite a hardship for her family financially. And she walked into this meeting that Jamie was at, and he looked at her, and he just knew that the Lord wanted to heal her. Like, it was just this thing. It wasn't just like, in general, yeah, God heals, you know, like anything like that. It was, he saw what the Lord was doing with her. And so he said, hey, you know, so-and-so, the Lord is going to heal you right now. Like, I mean, just plain as day, the Lord is going to heal you right now. And this, by the way, wasn't really a church that believed in that. So there were some people that were taken aback, you know, and do you know what happened, though? She got healed. The Lord healed her. Yeah, it was an amazing thing. She, like, wrote us, like, I don't know, 5 letters after that, as though, like, just with, because she had so much thankfulness, because it had impacted her life so much. You know, so when you see what heaven's doing, you can stand in that kind of faith and confidence because you know that it's what the Lord's doing, and so you're not just making it up, you know, but you're partnering with him, and he's doing it, so it's going to work, you know, and then you don't have to worry about offending people either because they're not really offended with you, but they're offended with heaven, and that's not really a complaint that you have to take up. You know, it's not that we live our lives on purpose to offend people, but if we do offend people, let it be because we're actually doing what heaven's doing, not because of our agenda. You know, sometimes we, like, get weird ideas that if we're living, like, in the world and people are offended with us, that we must be living right as Christians. Like, that's not really true. You know, maybe people are offended at you because, you know, you're kind of a jerk. I'm sure that's not you. You know, it's, you know, it's not a word for you. It's for somebody else. I'm just saying that if we're going to be offended, let it not be because we're pushing our own agenda to try to accomplish something, even if it's something good, but let it be because we actually see what the Father's doing, and so we partner with that. All right. I better move on before I get in trouble. All right. So living your life according to the agenda of heaven is living according to God's will. And the thing that's really awesome about that is that his will is always good. Like, he is a good God. He is a good Father. We can trust him. When Jesus says in verse 30 that I just read a little while ago, and he says, as I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of him who sent me. That word there for just, you know, like Justice is a pretty hot topic. We want to be a people of justice, right? But how many of you know that we want to have, like, heaven's justice flow through our lives and not just earth's, right? So that word for justice there, it's about righteousness and holiness and innocence. But what it's actually saying, like, if you use that word in connection with people, if you're speaking about a person, you're saying that they're in a state of, like, right conduct, that they're behaving righteously. You know, that's what you're saying about a person. But if you're saying it of God, it designates the perfect agreement between his nature and his acts. Like, Jesus, everything he does is according to the nature of God. Like, everything he does is according to the nature of God. He never violates the nature of God. Why is this important? It's important because then we know if he's doing something that it is in line with who God is. And if God is good, and if he is a God of love, and if he is a good father, then anything he does has to be in alignment with that because he won't violate his nature. And this is something that should reassure us because people aren't like this. You know, you're probably not like this. I don't know if you've ever had a moment. I was describing my moment this week. In fact, my whole week was just, you know, I'm glad it's a new week. It's a good week, right? You know, but where you respond to something and it's not according to your nature. Like, you have an off day, you do something in anger, you, like, whatever it is, and you think later, where did that come from? That's not who I am. Like, I don't understand. What was that? You know, sometimes you'll, like, uncover that you still have, like, a wound from your past that you didn't know was there, and all of a sudden it comes out. And we feel sometimes, like, in those moments, like, really messy, and, you know, it's just not good to be in process. It's not good to face ourselves sometimes. Or at least that's how I feel. Maybe you guys have already worked through your process, but I am still in process, definitely. And sometimes I think, where did that come from? Like, I thought I left that behind a long time ago. I don't understand, you know? But so that's our experience as humans, but that's not how, like, we can't impose that as though that's who the Lord is. We can't think that sometimes when he acted, it was somehow outside of the nature of who he was or who he is. It may be that we don't understand. Like, I've had those moments where I've had to go, Lord, I know you're good. Like, I know you're good. I believe you're good. I don't see it right now. Like, in this circumstance, I don't see your goodness. But I know that you're good, and so I'm just going to trust you. I'm just going to trust you. I'm going to be faithful to you. And what's amazing is that when you walk with him faithfully like that, you begin to see things that you don't see at the time. Like, you can look back later and go, oh, I didn't understand that you were doing that, Lord. Oh, I didn't understand, you know? And he has this amazing way of being able to encounter you in times of tragedy where he brings peace and he brings something beautiful out of the worst things. Like, that's who he is. He doesn't act apart from his nature. So we don't always understand, but we can't allow our emotions or our limited understanding to dictate the choices that we make. We have to be people that trust him and believe that everything he does is part of who he is and that his ways are higher and better and that he's good and he's faithful and we can trust our lives to him. Because when we do that, then we can partner with what he's doing and be a part of things that will be not only great here, but will actually be fruit that will last to eternity. That is the kind of life that I want to live. So the last point that I want to make is that when you live according to the agenda of heaven, you're having to lay aside your own will to embrace his. And so that means that you have to begin to think of yourself a little bit differently. And what I mean by that is, you know, we love to celebrate freedom. How many of you are thankful that God set you free? Right? Like, I'm thankful for that, right? Like, I love it. I love to be free in his presence. I can look back at my life and see, like, how much he truly has set me free from and rejoice in that. But what we often don't realize while we're celebrating freedom is that we don't actually get to stay free. Yeah, I thought you guys would be excited about that. You know, what do you mean? It's for freedom that Christ set us free. Yes, it's for freedom that Christ set us free. But what happens is we're enslaved to sin. And we don't have a choice because we're actually slaves of sin. Before you encounter Christ, if there's anybody in here that doesn't know him as their Savior, you actually are enslaved to sin. You may not realize it, you know, but what happens is you don't really see it fully until all of a sudden he comes and you encounter him and then you're free. And then you go, oh my goodness, you know, like I didn't realize that. Some of us, you know it, but the Lord encounters us. He gives us freedom, but it's not so that we can be free to live according to our own whims for the rest of our life. You know, that's how we tend to think of freedom. Like here in America, at least, like we're free. We get to do whatever we want. We get to pursue our dream. We get to be happy. Nobody gets to tell us what to do. You know, that's freedom in our minds, but that's not what freedom in Christianity looks like. It's that Jesus set us free from sin and death, and now we get to be slaves to righteousness. That we don't just stay, because the thing is, if you begin to live according only to your own whims, you just go right back to slavery to sin. You just don't realize it. Because it may look different, it might smell different, but it's the same thing. In Romans 6, verses 15 through 18, I'm going to read that in the New Living Translation. It says, well then, since God's grace has set us free from the law, does that mean we can go on sinning? Of course not. Don't you realize that you become the slave of whatever you choose to obey? You can be a slave to sin, which leads to death, or you can choose to obey God, which leads to righteous living. Thank God, once you were slaves of sin, but now you wholeheartedly obey this teaching we have given you. Now you are free from your slavery to sin, and you have become slaves to righteous living. So what happens is when Jesus encounters us, he gives us freedom. And the freedom he gives us allows us to join our hearts in love with him and to choose to become a slave to righteousness. And it's important that you recognize that and that you think of yourself that way because it answers a lot of questions that can trip you up in the journey otherwise. Because this is the deal, is that if you're walking with the Lord, if you're really saying, okay, I want to follow the agenda of heaven, I want your will to be done in my life, then what you're doing is you're tying yourself to him. So when he tells you to do something, it's already been answered. So when he says, hey, I want you to go and pray for that person, you go, well, I've already said yes. You know, and so you do it. You know, when he says, hey, I want you to pray for this, you go, okay, I've already said yes. Like, it's not a question, you know. Or if he says something more drastic, this is what I want you to do with my life, your life. This is what I want you to do with your life. This is, like, I'm asking you to surrender this. I'm asking you to trust me and to follow me in this path. That you don't actually have a choice. And the truth of the matter is that if you love him, you really don't. Because if you say no, it's going to bother you. It's going to bother you and bother you and bother you until finally you will go, oh, fine. At least, not that I'm speaking from experience or anything. You know, where you know the Lord is saying, hey, do this. And you go, but it doesn't make sense. But I had this other plan, but I'm holding on to this thing that I really like. And I'm going to have to put it down if I go here. You know, and you don't really want me to put this down, right? Like when Jamie and I planted the church, we moved into a home in Belle Plaine in the same, like in within 4 weeks, we had moved. We got two dogs and we had our third child. It was a fun month. And we planted this church. And when we were building our home in Belle Plaine, which, by the way, was a complete gift. There was divine provision. I mean, it was amazing. We couldn't actually afford the home. It was our first, like, home that we owned. You know, we had been moving quite a lot when Jamie had been in the military and then when we were figuring out what we were going to do. And it was just this gift. It was this little house in Belle Plaine, you know. And we didn't know that we were going to be planting a church in Eagan. Because I don't know if you know this, but Belle Plaine and Eagan aren't next door. You know, and so after a period of time, I mean, it was probably several years. And the house, by the way, it was such a gift, not just because the Lord provided, but because it was in Belle Plaine. And we had gone through kind of just a difficult time leaving where Jamie had been in ministry, previously. And there was, there was just a lot of hard things that we were walking through. And so our little home in Belle Plaine was like a sanctuary. I could go like to the little grocery store. Nobody knew me, like I wasn't going to run into people. Like it just really felt like this healing, like balm, And after a period of time, the Lord was like, you're going to have to give your house back to me. But you gave it to me. It's my house. You can't give a gift and then demand it back. Like, everybody knows this, And the Lord was just like, no, you got to give it. You got to give it up. And it was really hard for me. I didn't want to give it up. And it was this process that I had to go through where I had to go, okay, Lord, like you gave me this house. I can give it up. If you gave me this house, you can give me another one. Like I'm going to trust you. But I had to actually unclench my fists in order to surrender it. And it would be a little bit of a journey, but the Lord was faithful and he gave us a house. And it's like 5 minutes away from here. And it's more beautiful than I could have anticipated. Like, it is, the Lord provided for it miraculously. Like, the story of it is actually amazing. It's such a testimony of God's goodness. I'll just tell you this, that it is a house that has 2 laundry rooms. Which, yes, see, guys in here, you may not be excited about that, but I have 7 kids and 2 dogs. Like, it is nice to have 2 laundry rooms. I wouldn't have even thought to ask for 2 laundry rooms, and yet the Lord gave me a house with them, and it's because he's actually good. And so when we follow him, he's going to lead us into good things. It's just that in order to follow him, we have to actually keep an open hand. We actually have to surrender our agenda for his. Our family like went back after we had moved out of our home in Belle Plaine, and we went through it, and it was so crazy being back there, because I cried when we left it. It was sad. I think it was sad for our kids too. And we went back and we were all like, this is not as good as we remember. you walk into and you're like, oh, we really don't fit here anymore. This isn't where we belong, And that's what happens if you hold on to your agenda at the expense of what the Lord is doing or what he's trying to bring you into, you'll find that you end up stuck someplace that you don't really belong. That it might be someplace that had started out really good. That it might have been something that the Lord actually led you into to begin with. But he's moving you on for a reason. He wants to do something new with you that you haven't experienced before. And the walk with the Lord is so amazing because it's hard. Yes, that's encouraging, I know. It's hard, but the thing is that when you do hard things, it actually brings out the best in you. It challenges you. It causes you to grow. You have to have faith. You have to trust for him to do something greater than what you can do. And it's amazing when you walk with the Lord faithfully and you finally look back years later at where you were, where you thought you were going. Like, if you ever want to be thankful in your life, do that. I wake up almost every morning, with few exceptions, with so much thankfulness, because my life is so good. I have a husband that I love that's amazing, and I have these beautiful children, which, if you know my testimony, that was not the direction that my life was going, and it took real faith and real obedience for me to follow the Lord in that. I get to be here and do things like this with people like you. Like, I don't know if you guys know how awesome you are, but when we get guest speakers in here, they always talk about how awesome you are. They say, like, without fail, the presence of the Lord is here, And this church is family. Like, you guys love each other really, really well, and you love the Lord passionately. And it's an amazing thing. And I think, oh, I'm so glad that I'm here. Like, I'm so thankful my heart could burst, because this was not what I had envisioned for my life. I'm so thankful that I get to be here. It's because of the Lord's goodness. It's the hardest thing I've ever done, being married, having kids, being a part of this church. Hardest things ever. I am always at max capacity, and I never know what I'm doing completely. But it's really good, because I have to depend on the Lord, and I have to look at what he's doing. Okay, Lord, this is where I am. What are you doing here? So what am I supposed to do? And then I just line myself up accordingly to that, and it's amazing the testimonies that come when you do that. So I am done. This is hopefully an encouraging message, because, yeah, thank you. The Lord is at work. He is doing stuff. He is speaking. He is moving. And if you will just open your eyes to see it and invite his will to invade your life, then you will be amazed at what you get to be a part of. Can you guys please stand, and I will pray, and we will be done. Father, we just thank you. I thank you for these people. And I just invite you guys, put your hands out. And just right now, just invite the Lord to, well, right now, surrender your will for his. Invite him to show his agenda to you, that you could be a part of it. Oh, Father, I just thank you that you're faithful. I thank you that I can trust who you are and what you do. I thank you that you are a God who loves so extravagantly. I thank you that you have invited us on this divine journey where we get to partner with bringing heaven to earth. So, Lord, I pray for these people right now, and I ask that you would be giving them divine missions this week, that they would be in the grocery store, and you would interrupt their agenda to speak a kind word to somebody, to pray for someone. Father, I pray that they would be sleeping. Don't get mad at me for praying this, by the way, but that they would be sleeping, and that you would wake them up to pray with what you're doing in a nation across the world with people they've never met and never will meet, but that you will allow them to partner with what you're doing, that they would be able to see and they would be able to speak, and they would be people who are bearing good fruit because it is connected to you in intimacy. Lord, I thank you. And Lord, I just ask that you would bring encouragement to them, that you would touch their eyes and their ears, that they would be able to see you more clearly, that they would hear your voice without hindrance. I pray that you would strengthen their hearts and encourage them, that they would see testimonies of your work in their lives and in the lives of people around them because of what you're doing. Thank you. Thank you that you are not silent. Thank you that you are not still, but that you are here, that you're with us, and that you have good plans for us. So, Father, I bless these people right now. I thank you for them. I ask that they would just see your smile upon them this week, that they would feel your love and your presence with them. We bless them, and we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, guys. Happy Sunday.